on this election day. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. 83% of Republicans approve of how President Trump has handled the COVID crisis. According to 538's tracking on this, Republicans largely approve of President Trump's response. Democrats do not, and independents fall in between. What effect will the pandemic have today, both practically speaking in limiting the spread at the polls and as the overriding threat our nation faces? What do you feel on this election day? We're at 800-642-1234. Bradley Jones is a research associate at Pew Research Center, where he works on U.S. public opinion about politics. And he earned his doctorate in political science, by the way, from UW-Madison. Brad, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here.
And we also have Kathy Kramer with us, a UW-Madison political science professor. Her most recent book is called The Politics of Resentment, Rural Consciousness in Wisconsin and the Rise of Scott Walker. Kathy, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be with you today.
Well, Kathy, let's start with you. You have been in the thick of polarization, studying it for years and years in Wisconsin. What do you make of the rhetoric that's surfaced in this presidential campaign?
Well, it's really pretty striking, I have to say. And my sense is that many Wisconsinites are just glad it's election day and hoping that somehow after today the rhetoric improves and there's just more civility and we can feel as though we're more of a unified state again.
You've been struck about the role of Attorney General Josh Call in explaining what voter intimidation is. What do you make of that?
Well, it was really shocking to hear him being so public about what is voter intimidation and feeling as though he had to go on a bit of a campaign to inform the public. And it's just striking because I've not experienced that in my lifetime. And we just don't expect to have to be told in the United States and in Wisconsin to not intimidate each other at the polls. So it's really just very emblematic of the nature of the tension around this election and our expectations that this is a very different election and people may not be behaving as civilly as they have in the past.
Brad, the Pew Research Center, where you work, has been tracking polarization in surveys for years, and it can sometimes seem like Republicans and Democrats are living on two different planets. Let's look at the pandemic. What are the differences in how Republicans and Democrats view it and the government's response?
You know, we see a lot of divergence there in terms of the way that Republicans have viewed Trump's response to the pandemic. They're generally approving of the way that he has handled the pandemic. We also see Republicans typically taking it less, thinking it's less of a threat, both to themselves and to their communities economically and to their personal health. That's something that we've seen throughout these last couple months, and it really echoes the wide and seemingly unbridgeable gap between Republicans and Democrats in terms of their views of the president. It's tracked that pretty closely.
Not much variability in that. You've seen that really steady over time.
Yeah, certainly for President Trump, even though during President Obama's term, we saw that where there was not much variance between Republicans and Democrats over time. And it's wider now than it was then, but it's a trend that has continued, has been in the making for before Trump's time.
We're talking with Brad Jones, research associate at the Pew Research Center. Kathy Kramer here as well, UW-Madison political science professor. And we're looking at the effects of polarization in our society, taking your questions and your insights as the 2020 election is here. Tell us what the election means to you and what you hope it leads to. Join in at 800-642-1234. You know, Kathy, in your book, Politics of Resentment, you looked at rural Wisconsinites specifically and the perception of urban elites and that dynamic which helped former Governor Walker get elected. Do you see that same dynamic in play as we look through a national lens?
I do. For sure. And we see that a similar dynamic in many of the states in the country, but also in the country as a whole, where, you know, to be honest, those of us here in the so-called heartland, or sometimes we're called the flyover states, right? We sometimes have this feeling of being overlooked by people on the coast of the United States. And so Wisconsin, in some ways, is a little bit of a microcosm of the country as a whole.
And so we're a microcosm of the country as a whole, and we are a swing state. What impact does that have as we see President Trump spending so much time on the ground here in recent weeks, ahead of today's election?
Yeah, well, we definitely aren't being ignored right now.
I was going to say, we're no flyover country.
Oh my gosh, there's still been so much attention here on Wisconsin. And I think it's interesting in so many ways. Just the way in which our presidential elections are set up, really, namely with the Electoral College, means that there's just a handful of states, about 11 states, that are getting a tremendous amount of attention from the campaigns. And the rest of the country, not so much. So not every state feels like Wisconsin does today, where we've just been inundated with this election. And I think the visits from the campaigns are notable in that, just given the pandemic and the way in which the campaigns have treated their campaign so differently, right? So President Trump has made a big point to be here in person and have in-person rallies as heavily attended as possible. And Joe Biden has opted for a different strategy, much more socially distant strategy. And it speaks to just the divide, the partisan divide in attitudes and behaviors around the pandemic.
Brad, what effect do you think the pandemic has had on partisanship itself? Has it become another partisan issue, or has it inspired people to try to overcome it?
Well, we definitely see some places where both Republicans and Democrats, have some levels of agreement in terms of, I said before that typically Republicans and Democrats have divergent views when it comes to how serious a threat they think it is. But when we ask people the things that they're doing, we see that there's not such a big difference between Republicans and Democrats in terms of the ways that they've been behaving in recent months.
Interesting.
But when it comes to the election, one of the biggest factors is absentee voting. So we've seen a big partisan divide in terms of the share of Biden supporters who say they plan to or have already voted by mail at this point. Where Trump supporters are much more likely to say that they wanted to vote on election day. And that carries forward into views about the accuracy of the count, where Trump supporters have much less confidence in the counting of absentee ballots, where there's much less of a divide in terms of how confident both sides are in election day.
We have Brad Jones from the Pew Research Center on this election day and UW-Madison political scientist Kathy Kramer. Do you identify as a Republican or a Democrat? What do you think motivates people who support the other party? Do you feel like you have anything in common with the other side? What are the biggest divides you see? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're discussing political polarization in this moment we face as a nation. It is the morning show on this election day. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Pew Research Center has documented political polarization for years and years now, and it calls it a vast and growing gap between liberals and conservatives, Republicans and Democrats, and a defining feature of American politics today. Public opinion more divided than ever on COVID. What are the implications at the ballot box? What do you believe could unite our nation? Is it possible? Do you worry polarization could lead to violence? Be part of this. 800-642-1234. Brad Jones is a research associate at Pew Research Center. Kathy Kramer, a political science professor at UW-Madison, and they stay with us for the hour. Let's bring in Lisa now, joining us from Appleton. Hi, Lisa. What is your voting story?
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm from Appleton. Well, I'm so excited today. The only thing that maybe is not said in my story today, I can't vote, but my kids will, and it's our first generation in our family. We are immigrants from Mexico. We've been living here for 20 years, and this is the first time our family is going to go for election. And I ask all the Latino community, get united. We're going to go through, and Biden will be the next president.
Okay, so, Kathy, I want you to jump in here because Lisa is a first-generation voting family, not taking voting for granted.
Yeah, that definitely seems to be the case among a lot of Wisconsinites, right, and probably folks across the United States where turnout in this election is expected to be really high. So I imagine we're seeing a lot of first-time voters this election season, I'm saying, rather than election day, just given that so many people have voted already. There's just so much interest in this election. People feel very strongly about their candidate. There are very few people who are undecided.
What do you see, Brad, out of the Latino vote, the Hispanic vote? What can you tell us about this population?
So over the past 25 years, the Hispanic vote has been trending a little more towards the Democratic Party. Overall, they tend to support Democratic candidates more than Republican candidates. In our most recent data, we have 63% of Hispanics identifying with or leaning towards the Democratic Party, with 29% identifying with or leaning towards the Republican Party.
And a record 32 million Hispanics are projected to be eligible to vote today. Is that a moment to take a pause with that number?
Absolutely. So the demographics of the country have changed pretty steadily over the last 25 years, with the declining share overall in the white population and increasing shares of Hispanics, Asians, and those of other races and ethnicities. And that's an important part of the story of American politics.
Kathy, you've been spending some time recently listening to conservative talk radio. What are you hearing?
Well, they're quite excited about Election Day, like everyone is, and very supportive of President Trump. There's a lot of talk in the last few weeks, I would say, in particular, about how a vote for President Trump, it's been striking to me, they've been saying a vote for President Trump is not necessarily a vote for the person, but a vote for a whole set of policies that people support, from, speaking of immigration, from secure borders to Second Amendment rights to protecting the unborn, and naming justices to the Supreme Court and other benches across the country. That's been a little bit surprising to me that they're not speaking necessarily about a vote for President Trump being a vote for the person himself.
It's much more about the policies than the person, is what you're hearing.
Yeah, right.
Kathy Kramer, UW-Madison political science professor with us. Brad Jones, a research associate at the Pew Research Center. We're discussing the effects of polarization on our society and what they're watching for on Election Day, with your insights as well on what this election means to you at 800-642-1234. Brad, how much does the source of news information reflect the difference in partisan attitudes toward the pandemic? Is the source of where you get your news, does that parlay into how you think and approach the pandemic?
Well, we've definitely seen that. It's hard to say that it is a causative factor, but there are definitely big divides between those who get their news from, for example, Fox News or other outlets that have more Republican leading audiences compared with other sources. That's something that our Pathways Project has been tracking closely throughout the campaign in the last few months.
What is the Pathways Project? What does this work?
So this is a project that we've been doing this year to track where Americans are getting their information. And we have on our website a tool that people can use to explore the data themselves, and those breaks in particular where people get their news is one of the analytical lenses that's been important for that project.
Let's bring in Tom now in Burlington with thoughts on this election day. Hi, Tom.
I want to ask when Batista in Cuba was overthrown and Castro took over. The Batista was a dictator, and there was 150,000 people who came into Miami. We let them into our country and made citizens out of them. But they seemed to vote as a bloc for dictators or people who like dictators.
So, Tom, I want to just pause you right there. And I think you're wanting to look more so at the impact of Florida and how Florida can sway the election. Kathy, what are you looking for out of Florida in itself?
Well, Florida is a really interesting state for all of us to watch tonight because it is expected to be called relatively early, given that they could start counting their ballots before Election Day, and that all of Florida will be done voting after Central Time polls close because the panhandle is not on the Eastern time zone. It's in the Central time zone. And how it goes is expected to be a really pretty strong indicator of the outcome of the election. So if it does vote for Joe Biden, that is a pretty strong indicator that he's going to win the Electoral College. If it goes for President Trump, it's not as clear, but that's generally what I'll be looking for. But also, as you say, like Florida is a really interesting state demographically. And so once data is in on, exit poll data is in on which types of people voted which way, there'll be so much to understand there about who voted for whom this election.
Florida, one of the states, as you mentioned, that starts counting those mail-in ballots earlier than Election Day. Wisconsin, not in a different camp, just started counting a little over an hour ago. Are more states going the direction of Florida or Wisconsin?
I don't know precisely how many states can vote early, but I'm
count balance
sure that,
early. Yeah.
Yeah. That they have to. Yeah. Thanks. That more states are in the Wisconsin category where they're kind of scrambling today to get them counted as quickly as possible. States vary in how many days after Election Day the absentee ballots can be received, as long as they're postmarked by by Election Day. But Wisconsin is more the norm, I think, in terms of when the states can start counting their mail-in ballots.
So, Brad,
I was just going to say, we all need to be patient and expect that the result might not be known this evening.
Right. Making sure that this could go well into tomorrow, maybe beyond. Are you concerned, Kathy, about a contested election?
Definitely I am. I mean, I'm concerned about people's perceptions of the legitimacy of the election in general. And really, so many of our institutions function because we trust in them. And it's if we don't trust in our elections, if we perceive that they're not being run legitimately, then it really undermines our whole democracy. And a contested election is, there's, you know, there's legislation that provides for that. And so if it is extremely close, then it's the right of the campaigns to contest the election. But I'm hoping for a pretty decisive election either way, so that we're not at each other's throats trying to decide what the outcome is.
Kathy Kramer is a political science professor at UW-Madison. Brad Jones with us, Pew Research Center, works on public opinion. We're taking stock of this moment in America. Have we become more divided as a nation under President Trump, or do you think we'll be even more fractured if Democrat Joe Biden wins? What could unite us? Is it possible? Join in. Your insights, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're discussing a divided America and where we go next here on The Morning Show this election day. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to Pew Research Center, 3/4 of Americans say the country is more divided than before the coronavirus outbreak, regardless of whether or not they support the Trump administration. We're taking stock of this political moment in our country and why the vast majority of President Trump's supporters approve of his pandemic response. Kathy Kramer is a political scientist at UW-Madison. Research Associate Brad Jones is with Pew Research Center, and they're spending the hour with us. Let's bring in Trevor, who is joining us from Appleton with thoughts on this election day. Hi, Trevor.
How's it going, guys?
Going well. What do you think?
Well, I guess one of my observations in your conversation, which I think is really great, Kate, you just mentioned, is that one of the main themes that Biden has been running on is that he seeks to unite America. And that's kind of a provocative question because, I guess, does America want to be united? And that's the big question that I've been asking myself is it risky to promote uniting a country that collectively does not really want to be united? Is there more of a celebration of the disunity than a desire to be united?
Mm. Trevor, thank you for that. Brad, does America even want to be united?
Well, certainly we see a lot of support in the abstract for political compromise and a lot of concern about the divisions between Republicans and Democrats. But like I think the caller is referring to, it's the devil's in the details of, when you get into specifics of a particular issue, it's hard to find common ground or compromises that people would actually be satisfied with. There's also another issue and something that divides the two parties in terms of the source of America's strength. So we've seen in our past work that Democrats are more likely than Republicans to say that the country is stronger because of its diversity, where Republicans are a little bit more likely to say that too much diversity leads to losing our national identity. And so this is even how you frame the question has political undertones.
Kathy, what are your insights there to what Trevor was saying on the discord and whether Americans even want to unite?
Well, I think it's a great question, Trevor. And to me, it speaks to the fact that those of us in the population, as opposed to our political leaders, there is a bit of a duty on all of us to ask ourselves that question. Do we want to be united or not? Because in my mind, the divisions that we're experiencing are very much fomented and or reinforced by our political leaders. And so a lot of the burden is on them to either show us, to reinforce and show us our divides, or to show us the way in which we are united. But part of it is on us, too. What kind of a country do we want to be? What kind of a state do we want to be? And do we want to focus on the things that bring us together? Or are we really wanting to focus on the us versus them? Are we wanting to focus on there's donkeys and there's elephants? It's really up to us.
And these are really complicated questions. I mean, it seems at face value something quite simple, but when you look at the layers of complexity, I would imagine from your political science sense, this can be a very difficult read.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things we're experiencing now as a country, which hasn't been in place in really a century, is that so many of our differences in the country are lining up with the partisan divide. So things like race, things like socioeconomics, education, the kind of cars we drive, the kind of things that we buy, the way we spend our times, all of those things are very strongly correlated with partisanship these days, which means even if you don't really consider yourself as very strongly a Democrat or very strongly a Republican, there's many other things that mark that partisan division that you might care a lot about.
Brett, I understand that one recent Pew survey found that even the way people describe where they live can be shaped by what party they identify with.
Yeah, so we looked at that. We've started asking on our big American Trends panel, which is where we do most of our public opinion work these days, just for people to describe their communities as urban, suburban, or rural. And that's something that we use in our analysis a lot. When we look at Republicans and Democrats who live in similar communities by a lot of metrics, you know, how far they are from the city center, how densely populated the city is, things like the light that is emanated by their zip code in satellite pictures, many different factors. We see that even Republicans and Democrats who live in very similar places are describe their communities in slightly different ways, where Democrats tend to be a little bit more likely to describe places as urban, and Republicans a little bit more likely to describe places as suburban, again, controlling for all of those different factors. And, you know, I think just like what Kathy was saying, that this it reinforces this idea that even these things that don't seem political on their face have become part of these associated with our political identities.
We're talking with Brad Jones, research associate with Pew Research Center, Kathy Kramer here as well, UW-Madison political science professor and author of The Politics of Resentment, sharing your comments, your questions on this election day about the future of our nation, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in John now, who's joining us from Appleton. John, hi.
Hi, thank you. And I guess to continue the conversation around the I don't believe the difference in values is ever going to be resolved. You're always going to have those who want authoritarian governments versus democracies, those who want, white nationalism versus diversity, et cetera. So that I don't believe will ever change. The question or challenge, excuse me, that I see is how do we frankly live together without killing each other? Thank you.
Kathy, I want you to respond there to what John is saying first.
Well, it's a really good point that we shouldn't expect that our differences disappear. And to remind ourselves that even here in Wisconsin, we've had political differences for a good long time, meaning we should generally call ourselves a purple state, and mm-hmm. that many of our recent elections have been very close. And even over the past century, even though some of the elections haven't been that close, we've never had a string of more than two elections won by the same presidential elections won by the same political party. I may be off by one election now that I think of it, but We've had partisan differences for a good long time. The trick is not to eliminate those differences, but to figure out how we can nevertheless respect one another and figure out how to govern each other in a peaceful way.
When you were researching your book about politics of rural Wisconsin, what were the biggest partisan divides that you noticed between rural and urban areas?
Well, I would say to start that one thing that really struck me was just how little people actually identified with one political party or another. They didn't think of themselves as strong Republicans or strong Democrats. And I would say there's widespread disenchantment with across all kinds of people with the political system as it is. But what I heard in our smaller communities was this sense of just people perceiving that they weren't getting their fair share, that they weren't getting their fair share of resources from the state or the federal government, of attention from political decision makers and other important decision makers in society, and that they weren't getting their fair share of respect from people in the cities. They just perceived that the people making the decisions that affected their lives didn't know them, didn't care about them, didn't understand the challenges that they faced, and didn't actually even like them. So it was pretty striking to me as someone who's lived in Wisconsin most of my life. I naively wasn't aware of this sentiment in our smaller communities.
I wonder if that sentiment has changed at all over the last 4 years.
I'm not sure. And, you know, it's not everybody in a rural community conveys this, but I would say our response to the pandemic suggests that it's still pretty much in place. By that, I mean, we've seen a lot of responses to mask mandates, stay-at-home mandates of people in smaller communities wondering, you know, why these decisions are being made in the cities and communicated out to them when maybe their experience of the pandemic early on was pretty different than what was going on in the cities.
Brad, at Pew, have you made some measurements on mask wearing and mask mandates? What have you seen?
Oh, we have. Most recently, we asked people just an open-ended question where they could respond however they wanted, and there we saw pretty significant differences between Republicans and Democrats in terms of how they talk about masks. You know, like Kathy is referring to, there's a lot of resentment from Republicans about the mandates and about being required to wear them, where from Democrats we see a lot more concern about people not wearing them. And so that's just another element of polarization.
Brad Jones, Pew Research Center, Kathy Kramer, political science professor at UW-Madison. They're helping us understand our nation at this moment on Election Day with your insights as well, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Kathy Kramer and Brad Jones here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Brad Jones from Pew Research Center and political scientist Kathy Kramer from UW-Madison. We're exploring what to do as a nation on this election day when echo chambers and information bubbles cause Americans to trust each other less and fear each other more. Are we really as divided as we think? How do we build a shared future together? Kathy, I understand that you helped lead the Local Voices Network. Can you tell us a bit about this project?
Sure. So this was a collaboration. It is a collaboration that I have been involved in with a nonprofit called Cortico, which is associated with the MIT Media Lab. And basically what it is a community dialogue program in which groups of people come together to have conversations about the things that concern them. And then these conversations are recorded and shared with other people in their communities and with journalists and policymakers to try to lift up the voices of so-called ordinary people, and in a way that enables them to reflect on their stories and to hear each other's stories. And so it's one attempt to try to enable us to imagine together who we want to be and to better understand one another.
What have these conversations been like? What have been those aha moments?
Well, I think one aha is just how much people enjoy having an excuse to hear one another and also to have their voices heard by other people. So that's been striking for a lot of people. And also, I think the way people's stories about their own lives communicate so much. And when you ask people, what are your big concerns, the things that come out are not necessarily related to Democrats or related to Republicans, but are related to kind of their everyday lives and their personal struggles in terms of policy issues, just, you know, how they're feeling about their local schools, for example, or the quality of their water. And it's when people actually have a chance to talk about their lives that they feel something more of a connection to the governments and to each other.
Quality of life, certainly a common thread that goes well beyond party politics. Let's take another call. Michael is joining us from Lafarge. Hi, Michael.
Well, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a quick comment that it seems to me that a lot of the media likes to use a lot of narrative and descriptive words, nice large words, of course, to really divide people. And it's throughout the media. I don't see it more likely on one station or another. And because of that, it seems that that pushes the narrative for division so we can just talk about division and articulate all these different philosophical viewpoints. And the reality is we're all the human race. We're not divided by ethnic background because this country was built on the diversity of ethnic background. And over the years, it's always been divisive to control people through these identity politics. And I think the media should really get away from using all this identity politics. I mean, I know they're great talking points, but they're very divisive. And I think the media in general should be ashamed about that. I don't think that's a very good quality that they're pushing. I understand it's good talking points.
And I want to get Brad to respond on the media and the dynamic going on with what Michael is saying here about these talking points. Brad, what do you see?
Well, we certainly have seen some division of opinion in terms of how the media has handled various things in American society. So in general, again, there's a political divide here where Republicans tend to see the media as a force for bad in the country, where Democrats are more likely to see it as a force for good. And that is a divide that has increased over the last couple years. So it, you know, all of these things are shot through with politics. It's impossible to look at the data and not see that.
Kathy, what are your insights on misinformation and disinformation, and how journalists are dealing with that?
Well, I'd say several things. I think, I mean, Michael raises some important points. But one thing I want to say is that identity sometimes gets a bad name. Identity politics sometimes get a bad name. But the fact is that our identities are really important to us. They are points of pride often, like how we, the kind of people we see ourselves as, or the type of people we see ourselves as. And so it's not all bad. We can identify as badgers, for example, and it can be, you know, a great source of pride. The other thing I would say is that this isn't quite exactly on the point of misinformation, but there's this common conception, for example, that Republicans feel the way they do because they're all paying attention to Fox News and just Fox News. And there's a great team of researchers at UW-Madison that I've been lucky to be a part of that have been looking at where Wisconsinites get their news and what, the content of the news and how it shapes how they feel politically. And a paper that we recently wrote that was led by an awesome pair of grad students, Sadie Dempsey and June Suk, showed that in fact, most Republicans are not just paying to Fox News, but to a range of sources, and that actually Democrats or people who call themselves liberals do this thing of paying attention to sources that are consistent with their own views just as much, if not more, than people on the right. And so we should be mindful that two things are going on, that people on the right and people on the left tend toward their own points of view, but also most people pay attention to a range of views. And so we might criticize people on the other side for only listening to people like themselves. But in fact, it seems like many people are struggling to do a good job of being well-informed citizens. You know, they're trying to pay attention to
it. It takes a lot of effort to mix it up and pay a lot of, and especially in a pandemic when, you know, there are a lot of things to worry about. Yeah. And Brad, you know, there have been accusations and fears on both sides about voter fraud and a rigged election. What does Pew's research say about how much people trust the system, trust the electoral system?
Yeah, so this is something that we've tracked for a long time. Every time there's an election, asking people about their confidence that the votes will be counted accurately and as voters intended. As I referred to a little bit earlier, there's a divide this year when we ask between the votes that were cast in person versus the votes that were cast absentee. So only about 40% of Trump supporters say that they're at least somewhat confident that absentee and mail-in ballots will be counted accurately, where the number among Biden supporters is closer to 80%. When you look at the votes cast in person, both Trump and Biden supporters are about equally confident, and about 90% say they're at least somewhat confident that in-person votes will be counted. And so this is going to be, you know, as we talked about before, a really important element of election night tonight, as many of those absentee ballots will not be available immediately. And that it raises the possibility of concerns there.
Of course, and we're impatient people. We want results immediately. That doesn't jive with us. Thank you both for joining us.
Oh, it's been great. Thank you so much for having us on.
Kathy Kramer, political science professor at UW-Madison. Her most recent book is The Politics of Resentment. Brad Jones, research associate at Pew Research Center, where he focuses on U.S. public opinion and politics. Just ahead on this election day, it is 1 a.m. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.